And from that, the story has grown that the next advent, Baba will take Baba to Japan. We don't know. I mean, Baba doesn't give himself away that easily. But if he were a woman, if Baba had taken a woman's form, he would have given a lot of things away. Yeah, I confronted him. I confronted him with that. I told him, I know why you always come in man form. You never tell us anything. You don't let your secrets out. But now, if you were in a woman's form, you'd have told us everything. I told him, I said, I was. If I were. You're just getting smart, huh? Actually, you know, sort of a little twinkle, a little...
It must have been dramatic. What you said a few days ago, the image stays with me, when you would say that Baba would start to say something and then put his hand over his mouth and say, no, I mustn't.
I mustn't say that.
That must have been something.
You say, That's why he never told us what was to happen in January 69. But we're looking back, we see so many little hints. We cannot say he hadn't told us. And yet it's as if he was putting things before us with one hand, and the other hand was putting over our eyes. It was there, but we couldn't see. Everything was there, clear, but we couldn't see. So many things came back, Richard.
What were some of the hints that he gave you?
Well, many ways. Like that time when he said he was going to give darshan in Pune. I mean, he did give darshan in Pune, but without being physically present. But we didn't understand it that way. And he said he was going to give darshan there. And he might give it reclining, but he'd give his darshan. And so when Eros said, but Baba, you know, we can easily let your lovers know. How can you, that it is postponed. Because how can you give darshan in this state of health? And Baba said, don't worry, Erich, I won't let you down. And then when I said, oh, Baba, how And then when I said, oh, Baba, how can it be? You know, your lovers want mine. It's your health they will want most. I mean, and Baba said, don't worry. Very intimate expression. He said, it's very easy. Easy. And here you see Baba, for instance, hadn't prepared any of us for that darshan, if it had to be as it used to be, usually. Because, you know, Baba would have some pamphlet done, some message given, some charts done. Because knowing that the children also need to be fed through the mind, through words and things, discourses. But this time, nothing. Nothing, no move was made toward this kind of preparation at all. So again, when I brought up this and said, you know, some, in another way I put it about is postponing it, because how could it be? But day after day, I mean, the schedule he had fixed was so tight, without any day for recreation, just on and on and on and on, darshan, barely any recreation. So then he turns to Erich, because he was in the room at the time, and says, she's crazy, pointing to me. So my sister's crazy. I keep telling her it's going to be so easy, and yet she goes on harping on the same thing. How will you do it? How will you do it? So then I just got quiet. I still wanted to say it. How will you do it? I'm going to be easy. So in many, many ways, or that time when he was sitting in the chair, you know, as if he put up the tent and just, you know, already leaving this mantle. And I was reading that Rex Tal book, and he was appeared to be resting, sleeping. And so when I stopped reading, and Baba immediately asked me why I stopped reading, and I said, and Baba asked why I stopped reading, and I said, but Baba, you were sleeping, and this is your favorite passage, and you haven't heard. And Baba said, I always hear. And then he said, remember, even if my eyes are closed, even if my eyes are closed, I'll always hear. So go on speaking, go on saying, go on asking, uttering. Because reading aloud means the same as talking. Go on talking. I always listen. Even if you think my eyes are closed, even if you think I'm asleep and the bed, I'll always hear. All these things came up in afterward. The meaning of that, it was a message. The meaning came through so clearly that even when we think that Baba's now resting in the crypt, his eyes are closed, that it doesn't mean he's gone. He still hears, no matter what you say. It's always there. Another thing I was going to just say, and I went back to that.
Oh, it was very strong after my birthday.
Yes, and then Baba was so and so seemed so weak that day, you know. It seemed much worse. His health seemed much worse. One day it would be like that. The next day he would be feeling so good. And then again, this was one of his bad days. And Mary was standing, and I was standing near her. And Mary says, "Oh, Baba, when will you be strong again? When will you be all right? When will you be well?" And Baba says, "After my birthday, I'll be strong. I'll be so strong." And Baba Mary said, "After your birthday?" I said, "Don't." It doesn't matter, even if it's after birth, it's not that long. Thank God, even if it's like that. Long. Thank God, even if it's like that. But I didn't know the real meaning. Actually, when Baba's body was covered in the tomb, after the 7 days of vigil, when it was covered, that day, 7th February, and in 69, 7th February happened to be Baba's birthday according to the Gujarati calendar. It changes. So it was on the birthday. After birthday, after hidden myself from you, in one sense, I'm so strong, I revealed myself off. So many little ways, Baba would tell us.
And that little quip to Padre, who had come over and said, I don't remember what it was in relation to the Mandali growing old or Baba's health or what. He said, "Baba, why don't you, now it's time to close the shop."
Ah.
And Baba said, no, it's just about to open.
Yeah. He looks at Padre and again he makes the gesture of, "Man, close the shop," said Baba. "Why, the shop is about to be open." And that's what we know, it's just,
And then he also said something about, from then on there will be darshan every day.
Also here, he told, when Baba was seated on the porch, during Mera's birthday, the last of 1968, and December 22nd, and Baba said to those seated before him, he said, "Look at me well. Make the most of this. See me. You won't see me like that afterwards." And we thought that this only was directed to the lovers seated before him, and that it meant that when you come, when I give darshan in Pune, there'll be so many that you won't be able to see me as you're seeing me now.
So intimately.
Yeah, because these people then would be on the furthest row of chairs in that enormous pandal which seats thousands when Baba gives darshan in Pune. So we thought it was, and never, never for a moment thinking even that it could apply to us. We were, of course, you know, we had that privilege and we thought it was forever and ever and ever. That is why even when sometimes someone would come for a visit, when Baba would allow some woman, Baba, his close follower, disciple, to visit here, we would give our duty very often to them. You have a chance, go on, take the basin for Baba to wash his hands in. Yes, keep it, put his sandals. I still remember, I tell Nargis, "Go and put the sandals," you know, at Baba's feet, which is what I used to do. But I'd allow. Oh. To such an extent that we refused to believe it, that I very much believed that he would rise again. That's why it made my first week, in spite of the personal agony I went through, like everybody else did. But when I was up and about, going with Mara and saying to them, there was a sort of a lightness, and I was making all kinds of calculations. I said, oh, it must be 7 days. And then this is the date that comes on in July, surely. That's so many days. Now Baba will rise. Baba has said. Yeah. So he made it easier that way. And little Baba says, no. Baba now says, no more toys. Grown up. Now, we simply have to we continue to do what we did with Baba. Let me try to please him. But we had no more the liberty of telling him sometimes, you know. You know, Baba, enough is enough. Oh, Baba, do you really want me to do this? Or something. Even once in a while when something. Now, you see, I always say, he used to be before us, so we could see him. And he was pulling us along for his work. Now he's behind us, so we can't see him, but he's pushing us along. So you can't get out of it, but you can't see him. You can't, you just go on.
Mani, just while you were going over some of those hints that Baba had given, wasn't there a time that he said, and then the darkness will continue even after the...
Seated in this chair here in Mandali Hall, Baba said, when we come back from Pune, I'll give darshan every day. So, immediately when Baba said something that drastic, you see, I used to be apprehensive. Because I said, he would say again, he would change, and then he would say, I will not give darshan. First he would have us send a circular, and then it would be for us to send another circular, and you see how it would be very difficult for them and very difficult for us. So, Eric said that too, I'm sure, because he said to Baba, Baba, I'm always telling you to do that. You just tell your lovers, I will be available for 2 hours during the day. You fix your time. And you are available to them. Let them come anytime. Let them come anyhow, from anywhere, but during your time. Then you must not bother about where are they accommodated, how do they feel, are they all right, send somebody to fetch them, and nothing like that. You see. And Baba looked at him, he listened to all that Eric was saying, as if Eric hadn't spoken, and he said, every day. At that time, I was a bit nervous, and I said, oh, but Baba, you know, after you come from Pune, you see how you feel. If you really feel you can give darshan every day, it'll be very easy. We'll send out a circular. After we come from Pune, let's do it. Baba looked at me as if I hadn't spoken and said, every day, I'll give darshan every day. Yes, Baba, yes. All right, Mani, keep quiet. So much talk, so just say yes, and there was no mention of a circular. But then we realized, yes. Even in Pune, we forgot that Baba's coming with us, that he went with us to Pune and he's come back with us. Because when we said, this is what he told us about giving darshan in Pune, fine. Now this is all over. We have seen everybody. We have given a sadra of Baba to each group that we know. Well, that's that. We've done our duty and all what Baba told us about has happened. Now we go home, let down our hair and do something practical about living here. But now, Baba's come back here very much stronger, very much bigger. It's true. Whenever Baba would say something and the clock would strike, you'd tell them to see. That's true. And then that was only a point from which all this has started. So therefore, I know that what we see now is nothing compared to what is to come. It is grow. Till there will be nothing else but Baba. And he would tell us things like that. When the ones who are coming, the new ones, Baba, my new love, you old ones will be pushed back, you know? And we thought it meant the Guru Prasad Darshan, because in 69, the wave of lovers that came, we literally, it was like a stampede, okay? But now that we see it's going to just go on, you know, the little wave is going to become a big wave, the tidal wave, the ocean wave. But there were more things also, one came and slipped away. How nice it is that thoughts have become like butterflies. They don't make an impression on your mind. They sit very lightly, and if you're not careful to catch them, they just fly away. And that's what it should be, you know. The impressions should be very light. Only impression should be a Baba.
And march? You march to Pune?
Yes, that's another thing, Jim. Baba had said here one day, just casually for fun, he said, in March, we march to Pune. I said, that's just like Baba. He would come up with something sparkling, bubbling, spontaneous, things like that. So I said, oh, look. In March, we march to Pune. So then, when the time came, Baba dropped his body. All of us over, we came back from Mirabad. Now what? Do we go to Pune? Is Baba going to give us? How can Baba's attention? But will they come? No, why should they come? What would they come for? Yeah. Then, it was made clear right from while we were still at Mirabad, Rick was asked to send out a cable to ask, you know, to, will they be coming? And everybody said, yes, they're coming. And they came. They came by the hundreds. They came in chartered planes. They came by the plane loads. And buses full coming to Guru Prasad. What an experience. But before we left, what an experience. But before we left from here, we're saying, should we go? What are we going to do? We just had no idea what kind of a darshan. What is? How is Baba going to manage? What is he going to do? We even forgot that he was the one who was going to do. And then we remembered, Baba said, in March we march to Pune. So at least that is clear, we go to Pune. Because you see, we women did not participate in the darshans in that way, like the others experienced, even when Baba gave darshans in Pune, in Guru Prasad, or anywhere. We were behind the scenes. We were backstage. We only got experienced darshan from the reflection of Baba and the thousands of faces. We saw Baba's back, Baba's hair, Baba's head, Baba's little braid, and the sadra, you know, sometimes soaked with the sweat of exhaustion from the heat. And he's giving without a stop to the thousands, and each one receiving individually because he was giving personally to everyone. And you would have seen a picture of Baba and Guru Prasad standing up on the stage, you saw it that day, his hand raised, like that, palm open, stretched like that, hand raised full from the shoulder, and to reach his lovers on the furthest backmost rows of chairs, because they could not see Baba clearly, but they allowed the others to have a chance because they were from Pune and Bombay and nearby places who had more of a chance of seeing Baba. I still remember them, you know, the crippled Baba lover who was in Nagar. She was in the furthermost back seat, and she even had a little binoculars, opera glasses. She would look at Baba through opera glasses because she could see. But Baba, by standing there and putting up his hand like that, you felt. You felt as if an ocean was waving over, covering. Ocean was covering all that space. It's like an enormous wave of love from that hand. And it shows a little in the picture, but I remember that I happened to be standing on in the bathroom of a room that faces Baba sidewise, where he would be seated on the dais. And I was there. So I could see Baba, and I could also direct my brother Bairam and Jangu about filming him. Take it from here, and I'd make signs. I was directing. You know, take it from that pole. Go down. Take it from here. So and so's coming. Don't forget. So here I was looking at Baba from the side, and I saw Baba stand up and put up his hand, and it was awesome. I felt drowned. And no person putting up a hand like this could reach anywhere, and this, I think, not only reached to the furthermost seat, but much beyond. Baba can never give in a limited way because he's unlimited. Anything he gives has to be so vast, it more than covers what is, which reminds me of this grace. You know, people say grace before meals. And this is with cartoons. And here was this family, a poor family, standing up to say grace before their meal. But what was on that plate was something so little, such a tiny amount of food was there, and the grace was, Lord, pour thy grace in measure small, lest it more than cover all. But his grace always covers more than all. No matter how much our longing, no matter how much we want, he'll always give more than we want. Because it is his nature. It cannot help it. And it also reflected in his man life. My mother would complain, "Oh, Meryl goes to buy a keychain and he must bring home a dozen. They're not even so many keys. What's he going to do with all those keychains?" But Baba could never buy one. He never could give one. He was always about a dozen. The way he would feed the birds, the way he would feed the musks, the way he'd see to the feeding of the animals, the way he'd give. His giving is so bountiful that it's bound to overflow from whatever we hold out. Gives, gives, gives. Any other hint you can think of? No. Oh yes, Baba had kept sending messages to Mara to be brave. That's that 31st. You see, the men all had to go out before Mara could come in. But Rana and I were also there, but the men were there. And Dr. Gore was there some time. So Baba sent me out to give Mara the message to be brave. And then I tell myself that that was also a gift from Baba. Baba was not asking her to be brave. Baba was giving the being brave to her, giving this gift to her. That is why she was able to be brave. You cannot of your own. That is why when he says, "Love me," he's not asking love from us. He's giving us the love to give him. So when he said, "Be brave," I often wondered how much that meant, how much that meant. Later I realized that he was giving, "Be brave." And I, for some...
Randy's leaving.
Oh, you're leaving, Randy? Oh.
About it. It's just a real nice letter, and he said that we...
No joking. Like I say, life with Baba was no joke. Yeah. But you wouldn't want anything else on earth. No matter how many lives you had, that's all you want. Even now, if I want anything, that's all I want.
And that's all that's worth wanting. I tell them that the goal of a lover is to please the beloved. And to prove my point, I somehow found this quote from Baba, which I use on my letterhead now. And that was, Baba said, "If you love me as Saint Francis loved Jesus, you would not only realize me, but you would please me." That is, placed above the lover's right to please him at all costs. And that right, that privilege, has been given to us as lovers. Not as seekers. What is there to seek? To love him. Like someone who taught long ago when I was first beginning to write letters, "You must have seen the light. You must have seen the light." And I said, "My God, how do I answer that?" And I was very conscientious then. I would answer every point. And I said, "Well, we haven't even got electric lights here." But after seeing the light of love in Baba's eyes, what other light is there to see? There is nothing yet. So for you all, look at the anticipation. You're already booked. You all have a date with him. For us, I don't know if it would be that, because he said one more. It would be that, because he said one more for me and for all who were with him in Meragat, the 14, he said 100 years, within 100 years, the game is over for us. So there's one more life, And he said, I'd be a man. So then I see your viewpoint, Erich, all the things that I say that you. Oh, you men. So then I won't be saying that.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'll be with the society for a while now.
Yeah, for sure.
The Gouging is written about. So, yeah. I mean, I mentioned it in the sitcom, but I wanted to get more sort of background about it.
Yeah, I thought it would all be too late for all of that, you know. But this is Indian time, is it?
Yeah, as far as including it?
Yeah.
Well, the book is finished, but it's such a large thing, and the first volume hasn't even come out yet.
Oh, I see.
So
yeah.
By the time yours comes around,
at the wall, at the very end.
You might be 65.
Yeah. You know, that's funny, yeah.
It's gonna volume. You know.
Yeah.
So I mean, the first volume that they're hoping is gonna come out next year.
Oh, that'll be great, yeah.
It's only up until 1922.
Oh, the early part, yeah. Is it really detailed, is it?
It's very detailed. Baba, she told Bowser to put the lives of the five perfect masters at the beginning.
Oh, really?
His father's life. Oh. To include that. So that's included in the first line, and then Baba's childhood and his contact with the master, five perfect masters.
I thought that'd be kind of really interesting because there's very little known about his masters, you know, isn't there?
Yeah,
and there's
in the
Mahabharata
journals, Dr.
Dhani's
written something.
A few bits and pieces, yeah.
But Bowser's sort of put it all together.
Because I remember in the Manjali Meme days that they were running around trying to sell the Pazni's biography.
Right.
And I often wondered whether that ever been translated into English.
Yeah, I got that.
Hmm.
All the information from that translation.
Ah, right. Oh, gee, that'll be.
I track that down, in fact.
I thought that'd be, that's kind of really interesting, that, you know.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah.
And, you know, see, besides the fact that was more than just one book, really. One was written in Gujarati, and then another guy's wrote it in Marathi. If you remember, Baba sent these guys out to Sequoia, actually, to talk to Pazni Maharaj and get details.
No, I didn't know that, no. Yeah.
I thought also that would be good to have translated. So
Found
a copy and had somebody look through it to get some information.
The details from it.
Yeah, if there was anything that wasn't already included in
English. Ah, gotcha, yeah. Oh, that would be great. So that's what in the first
volume, yeah.
The second one?
The first one.
Yeah.
His Lives of Perfect Masters come first.
That'll be great, yeah. Is it going to be really expensive to buy, like Love Personified, or not at that end of the game?
Think,
yeah.
Most likely, because the guy that's doing it is the one who did Love Personified.
Ah, yeah.
He has all the photographs.
Hermes.
His wife is here.
No, I haven't.
She's
no.
Just with her little
daughter. Oh, I did see a woman out there with a small child.
That's
his wife. Yeah, right. Oh, wonderful, yeah. Because his book is a fine work of love for Baba.
His whole publishing company published Bao's books. What happened is, after Baba told him Bao to write his life, this was on the 24th of January, 1969, just a week before he dropped his body.
Gee, right then, you know.
And then he said, he knew he was in such critical condition, Bao, he would get these jerks when he would start gesturing. So Bao said, wait, you tell me afterwards, Bao, you know, it's better.
Yeah.
Bao said, just be quiet and listen to what I'm telling you. Then he said, write my work, Father, my book, my masters. And then he said, save 100 pages at the end for my manifestation. And I'll tell you, explain my manifestation to you. And then a week later, he dropped his body. So
there's going to be 100 blank pages there.
Well, what happened is then when I came in 1975, he bowed, he was just hanging out for like this book, and I was like, this is sort of the last order around the body.
Yeah, gotcha.
So he started writing. I sort of asked him, what is Baba's manifestation? How do you understand it now?
That is, he interpreted
it.
Yeah.
That Baba had made it clear to him, and he started writing about it. And that book is going to come out in the year first, called Mare Baba Manifestation.
Ah, yes.
It's sort of a series of articles about
And who's writing that? Bao. Yeah.
Not Bao.
I'm getting those worked out now.
Wrote about his style and his work and how Baba's manifesting now. So that's even though that was supposed to be the 100 pages at the end, that's coming first.
Ah, so yeah.
At the end of this year.
Yeah.
Baba manifesting.
Great. Yeah.
So after that, maybe this will start. I mean, this is really much more straight biography. It's not like that. Did you see the book Nothing and Everything, which is really metaphysical? This is nothing like
that. Yeah, it's just straight brass tack sort of stuff. Yeah. Still, that's nice, you know, a lot of people like that, and they get another picture from all of that. They form a picture in their head, and that kind of...
Hermes himself is. That's why he did that first.
Because now, like in the early days, I read all the Barber work and all of that, and I kind of soaked all that up, and God Speaks and the Plains and all of that, but now it doesn't seem relevant to me anymore. It was good to know that. It was necessary to know that. But it's not something that I can really work on in day-to-day life, you know. And that's what interests me now, that you can get your teeth in and digest now. Because that's, we're nowhere near that stuff yet, you know. And so I like the stories from Mera, the women's stories about little incidents in Barbara's life. And that just shows the incredible patience and love and tolerance and those things which kind of mean so much to us, you know, in our life now, yeah.
Definitely. But, you know, I have a copy here of what I sent you.
And right, you want to go through it, eh?
Just sort of
yeah.
The blanks here. So you're, it would be William...
William Jeffrey, with a G. G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y. G-E-O-R-E-Y.
Okay. And,
R-E-A-D-I-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And your date of birth?
15th of August, 47.
That's my, you know, that's Independence Day.
Yeah.
My nephew was just born on that.
Ah, yeah.
So, when and through whom did you first hear Bible?
I wish I had brought that all that scroll with me. And, in fact, yeah, I went through it and I got out my passport and I looked up the dates and all of that sort of stuff. I have a funny feeling I didn't, but I may have just tucked it in the pocket of my... I can tell you basically now it was in about 66. And exactly when in 66 I heard of Barber, I don't know, but it was in sort of sometime in 66.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living at Balmain at the time in a friend's place, and this chap, Steve, I don't know his second name, but they were known at the time as Steve. He had a girlfriend called Joy, Stephen Joy. And Bill would know of his second name, know of them. This chap walked in, and he had a little book called Sparks of the Truth in a grey cover, you know, and it just had a few little excerpts from Barber out of it. It was only a very small book. And he just came in exclaiming, I've just heard about this, the Christ of the age, this one that's just all loving and so really honest, and he's fed the poor over there, and he just gives of love, and these few exclamations kind of caught my ear, and I said, oh, I'm interested to have a look. And when I read that little book, the various statements in it just kind of hit me like an arrow, you know, and bang, like that. And when I was reading it, it wasn't like I was reading another book. It was kind of came out differently, kind of very forcefully. And that was it. I just started to read all. I went and got all the books I could, the Discourses and the Wayfarers and Listen to Humanity, God Speaks, and read them over and over and over again, and just really kind of dived into it all, sort of thing like that. Then I heard of Bill Page, that he was kind of where the information was coming from, and that he was also having meetings and showing films. And that was the next step, was to go and see some films of Barber and talk to him about it, although we never sort of sat down and talked, just sort of said hello and Jay Barber and that sort of thing. And I was quite taken back by the films, the images I had of Barber in the films. But just the impression I got from the writing was stronger than the images of the films. And they were gearing up to go to the Great Darshan of 69. And he told me that it wasn't possible to write or go there, that he was in seclusion, that nobody should go there, and nobody should write letters or anything like that. And, that was all sort of okay, but I didn't feel part of that group, you know, I didn't feel a part of the Barber group at that time. It was all a bit strange, you know, all the bowing down and the Jai Barber and the sort of thing was kind of foreign to me. Because when I was a child, very small, and my father was an editor of a newspaper, and he used to, you know, sit me on his knee and say, Bill, now the truth is everything. You know, he used to drive this sort of thing home, and I still remember it today. So I was more interested in the truth than the superficial or the external expression of one's love. I was interested in that, you know, the kernel type thing of it. And I was so drawn to Barbara after a while, I just thought, well, I've got to try and get to India. I've got to try and get over there. And I got my first job in an automotive garage up at Dhurawar suburb where I lived. And
you said you met Bill, they were giving up for the 69 darshan. So you sort of found out about Barbara in 66, and by the time you got to Bill's house, it was
68? Yeah, pretty early. It was between end of 67, 68, you know, around about then, you know, because they knew long beforehand. And so it was about a year before that, there, towards the end of 66, yeah, around about the end of 66. And I spent a long time just reading the books, and because I was only a student at the time, and the possibility of going overseas seemed remote, didn't seem possible at all. And I spent quite a long time, I left art school, and I just sort of knocked around with musicians, you know, and that sort of thing. But I was still reading Barbara's work all the time. But it just kind of reached a point where after meeting Bill and seeing some of the films and stuff like that, that I felt that I just had to try and get overseas. And I was also kind of cloaked in the idea that, oh, well, I'll go and see the other side of the world, and if the money lasts, well, I'll get to see Barbara, you know. And at that age, I mean, one doesn't have very well-formulated plans. I was still trying to feel my way around sort of thing, but I felt, you know, Barbara was certainly, he became the kind of, where I was trying to get to, the point where I was trying to get to, you know, sort of thing. Instead of just going overseas, just on a sightseeing thing, kind of, he was the objective of the trip. But if I didn't get to see him, well, if the money ran out, oh, that's the way it was, you know. And I realise now that the idea of just going to see the rest of the world was really only a facade for really making contact with Barbara. And so it was in early 68 that I left Australia. I think it was early April that I left Australia for to go overseas, and it took me about 3 or 4 months to travel through Indonesia, Malaya and Thailand. I was going overland, you know, it was the cheapest way I heard, and it was at that time. And I was just island hopping, the rucksack on the back sort of thing, with Listening Humanity in the back, hopping from one island to the next and weaving my way across there. And so there was a few amusing incidents there. I had an old Stetson hat with a little badge on it, and one I got stuck in Sumatra, trying to get out of Sumatra, and the war was trying to get a boat out of Sumatra to Singapore. And I went everywhere. There was no possibility, except there was one chap. He saw the little badge, and he said, oh, who's that? And I said, oh, it was a spiritual master in India I was trying to go and see. And he riffled through his papers, and he said, oh, well, go and try this boat, you know. And sure enough, no worries, I got on it, and didn't cost me a penny, and I got over to Singapore, and, you know, I'm sure it was Barbara's kind of help then when I came up against a bit of a blank wall. And finally got to Calcutta, and got the train from Calcutta to Bombay. I was very interested in Indian music at the time, and I spent some time in Bombay learning to play the tablas. There was no great urgent kind of rush to get to Barbara because, well, there was no indication that he was going to drop the body or anything. So I thought, well, he's in India, he's going to be there, and I'll catch up with him sort of thing, you know. delays, you know. And so I spent a while in Bombay playing the tabla, and I got my tabla teacher to try and help me find out where Barbara was in India, because I knew he was travelling around. He was his kind of nature to travel around a lot, and whether he was going to, but where he was in India. And found out that he was in Ahmednagar. Pune, that's right. They said Pune is where to go. Go to Pune. Right, and I got to Pune, and
do you remember when you started?
I left India at the end of August, 68, and I spent about 2 weeks here, so it would have only been the month before August, around about the month before August. And then I spoke to Jal, Barbara's brother, and he showed me the house there and the room Barbara, you know, banged his head on the stone, and he was very informative and said, oh, yes, no, he's staying at Mayrazad in Ahmednagar and you must see Adi in the trust office first. And he said, you know, he wasn't exactly encouraging that I get to see Baba, but he said, well, go there anyway and see Baba Samadhi and the few that weren't staying at Mayrazad. And I was a few days there, I guess, in Pune, and then early August, week in August, say the 10th, about the 10th of August, I got to Ahmednagar and went straight to the, after checking into the little hotel over there, which one I don't know, it's all changed now. Yeah, because there's kind of paddocks around it at the time. And that's I went straight over to Adi's office after checking into the hotel. And they, of course, asked me where I was from and how long I was staying here and why I hadn't written first to let them know and all of this. And the reason I didn't write was because I didn't want to be refused. So I didn't write. You know, I didn't feel a part of the group, so I just went off on my own steam sort of thing. And he said, oh, yeah, Joe, very good and all of that. And I said, oh, I'd really like to see Baba. And I thought, you know, what I had read was the unquestionable truth, you know, and it, which it is. And I was very impressed, but I felt like I'd really like to see Baba, you know, just see it, just make it kind of concrete rather than written words, just seeing written words all the time. And he said, oh, well, write a little note and express what you want. And he'd try to get it to Baba. He said, oh, it mightn't be possible, but he'd try and get it to Baba. And so off I went back to the hotel room and wrote a little note. He also said to go out to Padre and see the Samadhi, which I did the next day. But I came back that afternoon and left the little note. And he said, all right, we'll come around the next day and see if we get a reply or anything.
Do you remember what you wrote?
Yeah, I wrote, not exactly, but it was that I, you know, dear Baba, the works that I have read of yours appear to me to be the unquestionable truth. I can't remember any much more elaboration except that I'd very much like to see you. I've travelled from Australia. I'd met Bill Page or something like that and very much like to see you, sort of thing like that. And that was the main thing that I expressed with him, that I thought his works were the unquestionable truth and the most honest things I ever read. Kind of, I thought they were incredibly honest, the way he expressed things. And those things I could, the things that he wrote, I could see them working out in day-to-day life around me, the way people behaved and things, and the things he talked about, I could see those very things exactly happening around me. That's what struck me as being so amazing, you know. And so that's what I expressed. And the letter came back after I went out to the Samadhi out there and Padre showed me around up in the Samadhi and walked down the crypt and looked around, but it didn't kind of hit me as the, how important it is, as I realised today, how important Baba Samadhi was, you know. Because yeah. Baba was alive, he was in Mayrazad, and so I kept thinking about over in Mayrazad, you know, well, this is well and good, you know, but Baba's over there, you know. And introduced to Muhammad and said hello and all of that. But the simplicity of Padre is what I call sane simplicity, absolutely kind of sane, you know, not like somebody that's simple because they can't cope with life around them, so they live in a very simple environment. He kind of transcended, you know, a cluttered environment. And I kind of felt very emotional. I kind of broke down in tears, you know. I just thought it was just incredible, you know. I don't know what it was. And he became very sympathetic and out came the cups of tea, you know. I felt quite embarrassed, you know, because I'd never cried before, like not in public at any way, not that that was public, but I hadn't cried. But I used to be in tears a bit before I left Australia reading Baba's work. I used to read his work before I used to go to sleep, you know.
Baba also, you know, had strong memories of him.
Yes, I know people have told me that now. I didn't know at the time. I didn't know that he'd went over there and kind of pleaded on my behalf. I didn't know that at all until kind of recently, until some people came back and found that out. And maybe that's why I managed to get the letters through, I think, you know. I don't know. But it's all kind of Baba's little Leela in a way, you know. It's all kind of meant to be, I realise now.
Well, so what happened when you went back to town? And
well, I went back to town, yeah, and sure enough, a little reply had come back via Urich, dictated from Barbara to Urich, saying that Barbara was very pleased to read your letter and wants you to keep him in your heart, for he's already there, and to remember him as much as possible so I'd be able to love and serve him all the more. Don't worry, be happy, things like that. It's not, you know, just simple, straightforward kind of answer. And that was it, you know. Nothing about going or staying or I could see him or not, you know. It was just kind of left hovering in the air a little bit. And so, oh, well, very good. I felt a reply to that reply was needed. And so I wrote another little letter saying, oh, I'd very much like to see you, and is it only, could it all be possible?